So the distinction that Jesus is making here to these Jews is not received well. But he's not done yet. I mean, he's got more to say about this. And I think now they're starting to understand it. You know, because he has said, you know, verse 40, you know, you seek to kill me. Abraham would not have done that. Verse 41, Jesus said, you do the deeds of your father. He said it again. You do the deeds of your father. They get it now. They say to him, we were not born of fornication. We have one father, God. Jesus says to them, if God were your father, you would love me. For I proceeded forth and come from God. Nor did I come from myself, but he sent me. Why do you not understand my speech? Because you are not able to listen to my word. So he continues Jesus is still just trying to make the same point over and over and over again. Now they understand that he's saying, wait a minute, he's saying we're not of Abraham. Well, he's saying more than that. And they're starting to get that point. Verse 44, Jesus says, you are of your father, the devil, and the desires of your father you want to do. He was a murderer from the beginning and does not stand in the truth because there is no truth in him. When he speaks a lie, he speaks from his own resources, for he is a liar and the father of it. Can you imagine their ears burning now as Jesus has come to this point? And now he has said, not only has he said, you are not of your father Abraham as you claim, but your father is the devil. You are sons of the devil. Yeah, I'm sure that went over well. So now we get a picture of where this conversation has come to. You know, so he's dealt with this in different ways and in different levels, saying even, you know, you're trying to kill me. Abraham wouldn't do that. Jesus knew what they were going to do. You know, but he said, you are of your father, but it's not Abraham. You are of your father, the devil. And they finally got the drift of that. So the charge from Jesus to these Jews in verse 44 is really strong. Now, I'd like to hear your comments about that. What comments would you make about what Jesus just told them? What would you have to add or say with that?
You said their ears were probably burning. I'd say it'd be more like their blood is
boiling. Yeah, that's probably right. I'm sure that's right. I mean, they've got to just be incensed at what Jesus has said. But, yes.
Mm-hmm. He talks about John the Baptist, and they wouldn't decide who sent him either.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So I always found that kind of interesting.
Well, as too often is the case, when there's that kind of an issue or that kind of a question they can't answer, they just go on to something else. They can't answer that. Well, yeah, they could answer that. They didn't want to answer that, and they would just kind of move on to something else. Yeah, you're right. He's not politically correct. No, no. That's right. And the truth does that sometimes. Exactly. That's what the truth is going to do sometimes.
Anytime self-righteous people, anytime it's pointed out to self-righteous people, their error, they don't like it.
Mm-hmm.
And
the lessons learned for us?
Well,
here's the big part of this. I mean, we could act the same way. I mean, we could fall into the same kind of scenario. Okay, we're not Jews, but we, as Christians, we can fall into that same kind of an attitude, and it's just as wrong. It's the same kind of a problem.
Jesus has put them in a position where they have to respond, and they only have two choices.
Mm-hmm.
They can become defensive, which they
do. Which they will.
Or they can believe the truth that Jesus is
right.
saying. And because Jesus has gone after them, I mean, this is not the first time, and it won't be the last, but he's gone after them with such a compelling argument
mm-hmm.
that they're stuck. They, all I can do is, as we see in a couple of verses later, accuse Jesus mm-hmm. of what Jesus just accused them of.
Right, yeah. Yeah, a real original argument there.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, they can't come up with anything else. And you mentioned again, they have to choose whether they're going to accept truth or not. Well, that's just what Jesus talked about, you know, a few verses ago. He's already made that part of the argument. If you continue in my word, then you are my disciples indeed. The emphasis being on his word. You shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free. He's already made those arguments, and they've rejected that. And he's going on to the next point.
Because
mm-hmm.
they couldn't be a priest anymore. Because who was their head priest then?
Because what now?
Who was their head priest? If they accepted Jesus, they bowed out to follow Jesus, worship their own religion.
Mm-hmm.
So they had, I mean, the common Jew didn't have much to lose by accepting, but they had a position to lose.
There is an issue with those who were in positions of authority
yes.
that seemed to struggle all the more with hearing and listening to what Jesus had to say. Was it a prestige problem? Was it a power problem? Yeah, probably so. Yeah, that was a factor. I saw on the other hand. Somewhere or less.
Well, I was thinking that the theme is continuing, really, from what he said to Nicodemus, and that you must be born again.
Right.
Nicodemus certainly was a Jew, and he knew that he was of the seed of Abraham. And Jesus said, you must be born again. That was one of the first, that was the first thing Jesus said to him. As though to kind of shake him, shock him out of this idea that that the Jews, and him included,
mm-hmm.
were God's children mm-hmm. because of their DNA.
Right.
And not because of their behavior,
mm-hmm.
their love, and their obedience to God.
Yeah.
So,
but that there's change that's necessary.
Between being born of the flesh and born of the spirit. Yeah. And what Jesus is talking, it comes back to here, really. Is being born of the Spirit. Jesus says, I know you're born of the flesh. I know that you were Abraham's seed, but you're still not Abraham's children because you're not following the faith of Abraham.
Mm-hmm.
And if you were,
mm-hmm.
then you would recognize
then you'd recognize me and you'd listen to me. That's right. That's right. Now, we're getting the bigger picture of this now, I think, as we see this.
Well, the one thing I realize in this is the humility, I think, that Jesus is trying to get across to them. And it's easy to become, like Earl was saying about being self-righteous
mm-hmm.
and all, I think when, and like the Jews were, you know, that they took pride in being, you know, Jews, being from the seed of Abraham. But I think, again, Jesus is trying to get across, you know, the humility about the truth will do that to you. The truth will humble you when you realize your position before God is one as a sinner.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that's the hardest thing for the Jews to understand. I think like Ken was saying about, you know, giving up following a priest or the high priest and all. And I think that's what it is. A lot of people don't want to give up that pride or
mm-hmm.
that position and humble themselves before God and accept the truth. And I think that's true with people today.
Mm-hmm.
Just rejection of the truth, and the truth is offensive. And Jesus, I think, again and again, is trying to say, you have to humble yourself in order to be followed.
You know, it's a problem today. It was a problem in the first century. And it goes far beyond that, too. There's always been this issue with man being willing to humble himself, to listen and to accept and obey what God says. What did Isaiah say of Israel? You know, at Matthew 13, verse 14, and in them the prophecy of Isaiah is fulfilled, Jesus said, which says, by hearing you will hear and shall not understand, and seeing you will see and not perceive. For the heart of this people has grown dull. Their ears are hard of hearing, their eyes have closed, lest they should see with their eyes and hear with their ears and should understand with their heart. They'd close themselves up. They wouldn't see. They would not listen. They would not open their heart. This was what Isaiah said hundreds of years prior. And so it was not a new issue. Jesus still applied it to the Jews of the first century, just like Isaiah had applied it to Israel, you know, so long before. Okay, so now we're getting this bigger picture. Jesus has brought this down to the point of now saying to them, you know, your father is not Abraham. You are sons of the devil. I mean, I don't know how much you can break that down or say it any different. But now it does bring up, I think, a question that we should think about. Who is our father? I mean, from a spiritual standpoint, who is our father? And what are we listening to? Are we going to be willing to listen to what God says? I mean, we can see the result here of what happens when ears are closed and eyes are closed and a heart is shut up. We can see the result of that. And again, I mean, maybe we said it before, sometimes it's easiest for us to say, man, what was wrong with those Jews? I mean, as we're studying this, it's really just not about those Jews, it's about us. I mean, the application has to be made to us. We can do the same thing today. We can act just like they did, and many do. And the self-righteous, you know, even as Earl is mentioning, you can be religious and be so self-righteous that still you don't listen to truth and don't know what truth is, even though it's presented. And that applies to us. And so when we see Jesus getting to the point with these Jewish leaders, there's application we need to make on this too. And so I say, you know, who is your father? I mean, the spirit of Satan is still at work. It's not like he's taking a break in the year 2016. He's going to ease up on us this year. No, Satan just doesn't do that. In 1 Corinthians chapter 2, let's take a little quick break over here. Go to 1 Corinthians chapter 2. 1 Corinthians chapter 2, and beginning here, around verse 10. The Apostle Paul, writing to the church at Corinth, and I guess reminding them, I hope, of what they had already heard and understood, but how God makes his will known to even us today. But God has revealed them to us by his Spirit, for the Spirit searches all things, yes, the deep things of God. For what man knows the things of a man except the spirit of the man which is in him? Even so, no one knows the things of God except the Spirit of God. Now we have received not the spirit of the world, but the Spirit who is from God, that we might know the things that have been freely given to us by God. These things we also speak, not in words which man's wisdom teaches, but which the Holy Spirit teaches, comparing spiritual things with spiritual. But the natural man does not receive the things of the Spirit of God, for they are foolishness to him, nor can he know them, because they are spiritually discerned. Okay, so this brings something around here to us. I mean, we're going to have to be willing to listen to what God says and what he has revealed to us by his Spirit. And if we're not willing to do that, then we're going to be just like those Jews that Jesus was dealing with. We'll be no different than them. Any thoughts or comments on that? As we go through the text, reading this a little bit further here, let's go back to verse 44. You are of your father, the devil, and the desires of your father you want to do. He was a murderer from the beginning and does not stand in the truth, because there is no truth in him. When he speaks a lie, he speaks from his own resources, for he is the father of it. And because I tell you the truth, you do not believe me. Which of you convicts me of sin? And if I tell you the truth, why do you not believe me? He who is of God hears God's words. Therefore, you do not hear them, because you are not of God. He said it again. Now, I've kind of lost track now. How many times basically he has said to these leaders, you know, you're not of Abraham. You know, you are not, Abraham is not your father, because you don't act like Abraham. You don't do the things Abraham would do. You don't listen to God like Abraham would do. And now, in sort of concluding those points, he just now says, you are not of God. Not only are you not of Abraham, you are not of God, because you do not listen to his words. Yeah, I'm going to say they're pretty upset, you know, with what Jesus has said to them. But I mean, he really got to the point, you know, on that. He who is of God hears God's words. And we need to make some application to that. Because now, really, we need to stop and just make some application to that, about what does that mean, you know, to us. I mean, that statement is logical, and it brings with it a very painful conclusion that is still very true today. And so when we think, you know, that we are the people of God, what is the proof that we are the people of God? What is the proof?
Our works. What
yeah. That we're doing the things God said to do. That we are listening, as Jesus said here, the truth. That we're responding to the truth. That we are obeying, he says, my word. Continue my word. Then you are my disciples. So you see, throughout the text, Jesus is making the same point over and over again. He says it in a little bit different ways and becomes more pointed with it as he comes to this point right here. Any thoughts or comments?
That terrible chapter division of chapter 3 there, he follows up what you had read with, but I, brothers, could not address you as spiritual people, but as people of the flesh, as
right.
convincing Christ. He says, I can't even talk to you as spiritual people
yeah.
because I still have milk, but you haven't progressed beyond that.
Yeah, yeah.
You are still stuck in jealousy and strife and all these issues, and you want to learn spiritual things.
Very much dealing with their spirituality or lack thereof. That's really not any different than what Jesus was dealing with the Jewish leaders, their lack of spirituality. Application, again, you know, we have to make to that. You know, it's in our society today, you know, while Christianity is under attack, well, when hasn't it been under attack? But certainly it's under attack. It's still easy to some degree for many people to say, well, I'm a Christian. I mean, the words come out pretty easy. You know, I'm a Christian. But there again, the proof is in what are we doing and how are we living? Are we following the pattern that God has given? Are we listening to his words? We are not the disciples of Christ if we are not obeying his words and following his words. And that's where the spirituality comes, right? And then, yes. 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 Yeah. Pretty easy to do. Jennifer? We can have that same attitude the Jewish leaders had that way. All right.
Yes. Well, I have a call about the general public, it seems to me, could be in the same basic attitude, have the same attitude and disposition as the Jews did in Jesus' day, and that everybody thinks that they're the children of God. I think that's generally true. Mm-hmm. Nobody thinks that they're evil. Nobody
right.
thinks that they deserve hell. And but you know the exclusive nature of Jesus teaching, I am the way, the truth, the life. There is one name given among men whereby
right.
you may be saved. That is very. Acts 17 comes to my mind. God made it of one blood all the nations for to dwell upon the face of the earth, but he's appointed a day in which he will judge the world.
That's right.
After the man that he's appointed, by whom he is given evidence by the resurrection.
Yeah, the proof being. Right.
And it's still that way.
Yeah.
Nothing changes, really.
Yeah. Right, that's right. You know, we've heard it before. It's like, you know, everything's different these days, but everything's the same. I mean, it can be a new cover. It can be painted and powdered up some. You know, things can look a little bit different, but really and truly, sin is still sin. Disregard for God's word is still the same. And there are false teachers that will fool us. They may have different names and have different approaches now than they did before, but it's still all the same. And the end result is still the same, because we'll all still stand before the same judge. The more they're the same. That's right. Solomon figured that out a long time ago. There's nothing new under the sun. In the last part of this chapter, verses 48 through the end, Jesus has not stopped his argument. But in fact, he is still trying to make the point to the Jewish leaders and to his disciples that are there as well. I mean, there are those who are listening that are truly listening to Jesus, that have kind of been in the story as we've continued along. Jesus makes an incredible statement here in this next section of Scripture, a very powerful statement when he says, "Before Abraham was, I am." I want us to read here how we kind of lead up to that point and the discussion that was involved in that. So in verse 47, or 48, "Then the Jews answered and said to him, 'Do we not say rightly that you are a Samaritan and have a demon?' And Jesus answered, 'I do not have a demon, but I honor my Father, and you dishonor me. For I do not seek my own glory. There is one who seeks and judges. Most assuredly, I say to you, if anyone keeps my word, he shall never see death.' Then the Jews said to him, 'Now we know that you have a demon. Abraham is dead, and the prophets. And you say, if anyone keeps my word, he shall never taste death. Are you greater than our father Abraham, who is dead, and the prophets are dead? Whom do you make yourself out to be?' And Jesus answered, 'If I honor myself, my honor is nothing. It is my Father who honors me, of whom you say that he is your God. Yet you have not known him, but I know him. And if I say, I do not know him, I shall be a liar like you. But I do know him and keep his word. Your father Abraham rejoiced to see my day, and he saw it and was glad.' Then the Jews said to him, 'You are not yet 50 years old, and you have seen Abraham?' And Jesus said to them, 'Most assuredly, I say to you, before Abraham was, I am.' And then they took up stones to throw at him, but Jesus hid himself and went out of the temple, going through the midst of them, and so passed by." Okay, I think there's a point or two in there that we might say something about, don't you? I mean, that was a powerful exchange right there between Jesus and those leaders. I mean, basically, the Jewish leaders, the best thing that they could come up with was name-calling. I mean, that was the best argument they had. You know, you're a Samaritan, and you have a demon. I mean, that was the best argument they had. That's all they could throw at Jesus. I mean, Satan works like that today, doesn't he? You know, that's about the best Satan can still, you know, throw out. And so Jesus had accused the Jews of being sons of the devil. And I'm not sure, best to say that he just accused them of that. He made the statement. He stated the fact that they were sons of the devil. And so they turn that around now. They're going to get their part. Well, you're a Samaritan. You know that? Okay, I mean, that's the best they can come up with. Now Jesus had some substance behind what he was saying. Now, that was what the whole argument was about through the middle part of the chapter, where he drew that conclusion. They've got nothing to draw a conclusion on. In fact, they don't even really try. All they can do is call him a name. And that's like the best that they can come up with here. And so the reply from Jesus, in essence, he's saying to them, actions speak louder than words. you say that your father is Abraham. But he has already said it, and he basically says it again, your actions speak louder than your words. And he's calling them out again here in this text right here. You know, in verse 49 and 50, I do not have a demon, but I honor my father, and you dishonor me. And I do not seek my own glory. There is one who seeks and judges. Most assuredly, I say to you, if anyone keeps my word, you shall never see death. Well, that's another point. But he has basically just, you know, said to them, I honor my Father in heaven, and you don't. You don't honor the Father because you don't honor me. That was his point to them. And it just seems as though in the text, as though that just blew right over them, because they don't respond to that at all. But then when he says in verse 51, you know, that if anyone keeps my words, he will never see death. Oh, how do they respond to that? Well, what's their thoughts when he says that? If anyone, you know, keeps my word, he shall never see death. What is their response?
Physical. They're thinking that it's still in the physical.
They have never made this transition of spirituality. What's that?
If Abraham's dead, how can he be?
Yeah, yeah. But yeah. What are you talking about? Abraham, our father, is dead. Are you greater than he?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes, he is. And it's a conclusion that he comes to. And it makes that incredibly powerful statement there. And so Jesus made clear once again his sonship, which he's become more bold in that as we've gone through the last few chapters. You know, because remember, just in the last few chapters, we've encompassed 2.5 years. I mean, we are now less than 6 months away from the crucifixion, you know, as we come to this point. And so now Jesus has become much more pointed in what he is saying. And he is acknowledging even more so that he is the Son of God. Now he has said to these Jews that, in fact, you know, are you greater than Abraham? Yes. Before Abraham was, I am. Can you imagine that? I mean, think about these Jewish leaders when they've got to be just stepping back saying, did he really say that? Did he just say that he's greater than Abraham? Well, he's never denied that. I mean, he's already been making that point. He has just now made it in a different way, in a very powerful way. And so when Jesus makes this incredibly bold statement in verse 58, most assuredly I say to you, before Abraham was, I am. What is that reminiscent of? What about God speaking to Moses?
Exodus 3:14.
Yeah. He is acknowledging.
And this blew their head off. Yeah. They couldn't comprehend this at all.
The Greek tense of the verb here, I am, is exactly the same as the words that was used by God in Exodus chapter 3. I mean, he is acknowledging in now a different way that he is God and always is. And so, wow, how does that go over?
Going back to, you know, again, they're looking at the physical. And yeah. Jesus is always talking about spiritual. And going back to Abraham, when he says, you know, Abraham, your father Abraham rejoiced to see my day, or saw my day, and rejoiced. You know, and again, going back to what he says, Abraham believed God, and reckoned as righteous. Again, God said that you would have a son, and Abraham believed him, and he had a son. He said, I will make you a great people, and I'll give you this land. And again, Abraham, knowing, you know, being old age, yes, he wouldn't see that probably with his physical eyes, but he looked down.
He looked for that.
And that's right. And so he saw Jesus' day when all nations would.
And he rejoiced in knowing that.
He rejoiced in that, yeah.
Now, do these Jewish leaders completely miss that?
Over the head.
Completely missed what Jesus was saying there. Mm-hmm. Abraham was looking for the day. This is though he was looking for a greater country. Remember, he was looking for that country beyond, and he was looking for the day that these promises would be fulfilled. And again, Jesus is basically saying in that, here's the fulfillment. I mean, he's acknowledging that here as well. Bless.
I've always taken that verse a little bit more literally, I guess, than perhaps other ways to take it. But, you know, in the Transfiguration, there was Moses and Elijah
yes.
who were there, which means that they still existed and they were still mm-hmm. had their same identity.
Mm-hmm.
And here we have Jesus saying that your father rejoiced to see my day, and he saw it and was glad.
And that sounds present tense, doesn't it?
That does. In other words, he's making a point here. When they say earlier on that Abraham is dead, are you greater than Abraham? And here he's saying Abraham's not dead, mm-hmm. really. Mm-hmm. In other words, Abraham still exists.
Mm-hmm.
He's not in the flesh,
right.
but he's aware of something.
I see that point, and I've thought the same thing about that. To express it, I'm a little bit less sure on what to say about that or how to say that. But yeah, I see that same point, because it's said in present tense that Abraham is rejoicing in this. I mean, that's a good point. Rick, you?
Well, obviously, you know, God told Moses, you know, I am the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And Jesus used that very quotation
yeah.
to state that God is the God of the living, not of the dead. So
yes.
clearly,
yes.
Abraham is alive.
Yes. Yeah.
And Isaac and Jacob. So I think it's less
than yeah. That's a good point. That's a good way of saying that. I just thought, man, that's an incredible way for this chapter to come. It's not a chapter for this session here with the Jewish leaders to kind of come to a sort of an end right here, and it's like they don't have really anything else to say. I mean, they've brought up the best argument they can make. You're a Samaritan. That was the best they could come up with. Now, after he says this, their next best argument is they're going to pick up stones and throw at him. I mean, there is no logical arguments here that they can make against Jesus. So it's name calling and throwing stones. That's the best they can do. You know, and not so unlike today, when you get into a serious discussion with somebody about spiritual things, and people get upset, and they can call you names. You know, people can get upset and even and become physical against you. I mean, that's what we're seeing right here. That's what was happening against Jesus. That was that same kind of response. It's an emotional response. There was no substance to what they could say. That was all they could do.
You have to remember that these guys, while they are religious leaders, they are also the politicians of the day.
Mm-hmm.
They are the government leaders as well. And their job seemed to be threatened.
And you suppose they were scared here.
Yeah.
You know?
And so they're acting yeah. like politicians.
Yeah. This is true. Yeah, this is true. You know, Jesus in this text, you know, claimed to possess the eternal quality of deity. He is saying, I am God. Just as Jehovah had said, you know, before. He's identifying himself, you know, in this way. Yeah, he possessed the same nature as the Godhood, so to speak. But again, it's not new. I mean, in chapter 1 of John, where we begin. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. John started us out with that understanding. He was in the beginning with God, and all things were made by him, and without him nothing was made that was made. That Jesus was there from the beginning. That he is God. And so what Jesus is acknowledging here is just confirming what John the Apostle has pinned to us here. So there's nothing that's new there. In chapter 5, verse 17, we read, Jesus answered them and said, my Father has been working until now, and I have been working. Again, acknowledging that he was with in the presence of the Father, that he was there. And therefore the Jews sought all the more to kill him because he not only broke the Sabbath, but also said he was that God was his father, making himself equal with God. And they did not like or accept that. When we get to chapter 10, we're almost to that point. You know, in verse 30, Jesus says, I and my Father are one, he says. Verse 31, then the Jews took up stones again to stone him. They had nothing to say again, I suppose. So that's their response. And verse 32, Jesus answered them, many good works I have shown you from my Father. For which of these works do you want to stone me? You know, he's repeatedly making these points. That he is the Son of God, that he is God, that he has been with God from the beginning of time. And so, repeated points.
You had said, you know, they had nothing better to come back with than the earth Samaritan, the other demon. And it just reminds me of what was in chapter 7, verse 46, when they had sent the officers to go and apprehend Jesus and bring him to him. And they did. He said, why didn't you? And he says, never did a man speak the way this man speaks.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that kind of says it all.
Yes, that's right. And there's going to be a very similar statement to that in chapter 9. Mm-hmm. You know, again, there's this acknowledgement that, wow, this really happened. We can't deny this. You know, it's basically what's going to happen with the blind man. You know.
Not only does Jesus claim immortality, but he offers it to them.
Yeah.
He says, yeah, if you believe in me.
Yeah.
You can have
that too. You can have eternal life.
You will not suffer death. And he's obviously referring to a second death.
Right.
They don't understand that.
Right, right.
And their response is, well, let's just pick up a rock and throw at him.
But do we get it?
I think it's clear they understood what Jesus was saying there. You know, why else would they want to stone him?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they understood the claim. You think they believed it? You see, they're still missing. And so, again, the application. We've still got to make application. Because we can be just like them. All these things that Jesus is saying to these Jewish leaders then, he's saying to us now. Are we going to act on that? Are we going to listen? Are we going to obey what he said? Are we going to believe what he says, that he is the Son of God? He is God. He was there from the beginning. Are we going to believe that and respond to that? All these leaders could do is call names and throw stones. What are we going to do? We'll leave it with that.